Chapter 13. Mushkin felt very uneasy as he went up, and did all he could to give himself courage. "The worst that can happen," he thought, "is that she will refuse to see me and will think something bad of me. Or perhaps she'll see me and laugh in my face. Hey, never mind." And in fact, the prospect did not alarm him very much. But to the question what he would do and why he was going there, he could find no satisfactory answer. It would hardly be altogether the right thing, even if he were to catch a favourable opportunity, to say to Nastasia Philipovna, "Don't marry that man. Don't be your own destruction. He doesn't love you. It's your money he loves. He told me so himself. And Aglaya Ipanchin told me so too. And I have come to tell you." There was another unanswered question before him, and such a vital one that Mushkin was afraid to consider it. He could not, dared not, even admit it. He did not know how to formulate it. He flushed and trembled at the mere thought of it. But in spite of all these doubts and apprehensions, he ended by going in and asking for Nastasia Philipovna. Nastasia Philipovna lived in a really magnificent, though not very large, flat. There had been one time, at the beginning of her 5 years in Petersburg, when Afanasy Ivanovitch had been particularly lavish in his expenditure on her. He had still had hopes of her love in those days, and had dreamed of tempting her chiefly by luxury and comfort, knowing how easily habits of luxury are acquired, and how difficult they are to give up afterwards, when luxury gradually passes into necessity. In this respect, Totski clung to the good old tradition, without modifying it in any way, having an unbounded respect for the supreme power of the appeal to the senses. Nastasia Philipovna did not refuse luxury. She liked it, indeed. But strange as it seemed, she was not in the least a slave to it. Apparently she could have done without it at any moment. She even took the trouble to say so, plainly, on several occasions, which made an unpleasant impression on Totski. There was much, however, in Nastasia Philipovna which struck him unpleasantly, and subsequently even moved him to contempt. Apart from the inelegance of the class of people with whom she sometimes associated, and to whom she must therefore have been attracted, she displayed other very strange propensities. She showed a sort of savage mingling of two tastes, a capacity for being satisfied and putting up with things and means, of which one would have supposed that a well-bred and refined person would not admit the existence. In fact, if Nastasia Philipovna had displayed an elegant and charming ignorance of the fact, for instance, that peasant women were not in a position to wear the batiste garments that she did, Afanasy Ivanovitch would probably have been extremely pleased. The whole plan of Nastasia Philipovna's education had been from the beginning elaborated with a view to such a result by Totski, who was a very subtle person in his own life. But alas, the finished product was a strange one. In spite of that, Nastasia Philipovna had and always kept something which at times impressed even Totski himself by its extraordinary and fascinating originality, by a sort of power. It sometimes enchanted him, even now, when all his former designs on Nastasia Philipovna had collapsed. Mushkin was met by a maid. Nastasia Philipovna kept only women servants. He asked her to take his name in, and to his surprise the girl showed no wonder, and she betrayed no hesitation at the sight of his dirty boots, his wide-brimmed hat, his sleeveless cloak, and his embarrassed air. She took off his cloak, asked him to wait in the reception room, and went at once to announce him. Nastasia Philipovna's party consisted of the circle she always had about her. The guests were few in number, indeed, compared with similar birthday parties of previous years. In the first place, Afanasy Ivanovitch Totski and Ivan Fyodorovitch Ipanchin were present. Both were amiable, but secretly uneasy and in ill-disguised apprehension of the promised declaration in regard to Ganya. Ganya, of course, was there too. He too was very gloomy and preoccupied, almost rude, in fact. Most of the evening he stood apart at some distance and did not speak. He had not ventured to bring Varya, and Nastasia Philipovna made no reference to her. But immediately after greeting Ganya, she alluded to his scene with Mushkin. General Ipanchin, who had not heard of it, was much interested. Then Ganya dryly and with restraint, but perfectly openly, told what had happened that afternoon, and how he had gone to the prince to beg his pardon. He warmly expressed the opinion that it was strange and unaccountable to call the prince an idiot, that he thought him quite the opposite, a man, in fact, who knew very well what he was about. Nastasya Philipovna listened to this dictum with great attention and watched Ganya curiously. But the conversation passed immediately to Rogojin, as a leading figure in the scene at Ganya's. Totski and Epanchin were much interested to hear about him too. It appeared that the person who knew most about Rogojin was Titsin, who had been with him and busy in his service till 9 o'clock that evening. Rogojin had insisted on their obtaining 100,000 rubles that day. "It's true he was drunk," observed Titsin, "but I believe he has secured the 100,000, difficult as it seems. Only I'm not sure whether he will get it today and whether he'll get it all. Several people are at work for him. Kinder, Trepolov, Biskup. He doesn't mind what interest he gives, of course, as he is drunk, then in the first flush of fortune," said Titsin in conclusion. All this information was received with interest, though it seemed to depress some, and Nastasya Philipovna was silent, obviously not caring to say what she felt. Ganya, too, was mute. Epanchin was secretly almost more uneasy than anyone. The pearls he had presented that morning had been accepted with rather a frigid politeness and even a shade of mockery. Ferdyshenko, alone of all the party, was in a festive holiday mood. He laughed aloud, at times, for no special reason, simply because he had taken up the part of jester. Totski himself, who had the reputation of a witty and elegant storyteller, and had usually led the conversation at these parties, was evidently out of humour and ill at ease, which was unlike him. The other guests, who were, however, few in number, were not merely incapable of lively conversation, but positively unable at times to say anything at all. One poor old teacher had been invited, goodness knows why. Then there was an unknown and very young man, fearfully shy and absolutely mute the whole evening, a lively lady of 40, probably an actress, and an exceedingly handsome, exceedingly well and richly dressed and extraordinarily taciturn young lady. Mushkin's appearance, therefore, was positively welcome. The announcement of his name caused surprise and some queer smiles, especially as from Nastasya Philipovna's air of surprise, it was clear that she had not dreamed of inviting him. But after the first moment of wonder, she showed at once so much pleasure that most of the party promptly prepared to meet the unexpected visitor with mirth and laughter. "Though it's his innocence," pronounced Ivan Fyodorovich Epanchin, "and it's rather dangerous to encourage such tendencies, it's really not amiss at the moment that he has taken it into his head to turn up, even in such an original manner. He may perhaps amuse us, as far as I can judge of him at least."
"Especially as he has invited himself," Ferdyshenko put in at once.
"Well, what of that?" asked the general dryly. He detested Ferdyshenko.
"Why?"
"But he must pay for his entrance," explained the latter. "Oh, Prince Mushkin is not Ferdyshenko anyway," the general could not resist saying.
He could never reconcile himself to the thought that he was in the same company and on an equal footing with Ferdyshenko.
"Ah, General, spare Ferdyshenko," replied the latter, simpering. "I'm here in a special position."
"What special position are you in?"
"Last time I had the honour of explaining it exactly to the company. I'll repeat it again to Your Excellency. You see, Your Excellency, everyone has wit, but I have no wit. To make up for it, I've asked leave to speak the truth, for everyone knows that it's only people who have no wit who speak the truth. Besides, I am a very vindictive man, and that is because I have no wit. I put up with every insult, but only till my antagonist comes to grief. As soon as he comes to grief, I remember it, and at once avenge myself in some way. I kick, as Ivan Petrovich Titsin has said to me, though he, of course, never kicks anyone. Do you know Krylov's fable, Your Excellency? The lion and the ass? Well, that's you and me. It's written about us."
"You are talking nonsense again, I think, Ferdyshenko," said the general, boiling over.
"What do you mean, Your Excellency?"
retorted Ferdyshenko, who had reckoned on being able to retort and so lengthen out his twaddle.
"Don't be uneasy, Your Excellency. I know my place. If I say you and I are the lion and the ass in Krylov's fable, I take the part of the ass on myself, of course, and Your Excellency is the lion, as in Krylov's fable. The mighty lion, the terror of the mods, with growing years had lost his youthful strength. I, Your Excellency, am the ass." "There I agree," the general dropped incautiously.
All this, of course, was coarsely and intentionally done, but it seemed to be the accepted thing for Ferdyshenko to be allowed to play the fool.
"I'm only kept and only received here that I may talk in this way," Ferdyshenko had once exclaimed. "Can such a person as I am be received? I understand that. Can a person like me be set beside a refined gentleman like Afanasy Ivanovitch? One is driven to the only explanation, that they do it because it's inconceivable."
But though it was coarse, it was sometimes cutting, very cutting indeed, and that was what Nastasia Philipovna seemed to like. Those who wanted to visit her had to make up their minds to put up with Ferdyshenko. He perhaps guessed the truth, that he was received because his presence had from the first been insufferable to Totski. Gania, too, endured unspeakable misery at his hands, and in that way Ferdyshenko was able to be of great use to Nastasia Philipovna.
"The prince will begin by singing us a fashionable song," Ferdyshenko concluded, looking to see what Nastasia Philipovna would say.
"I don't think so, Ferdyshenko. And please don't get excited," she said dryly.
"Aha! If he is under special protection, I will be indulgent too."
But Nastasia Philipovna got up, not listening to him, and went forward herself to meet Mushkin.
"I'm sorry," she said, suddenly appearing before him, "that I forgot to invite you this afternoon, and I am very glad that you give me an opportunity of thanking you and telling you how well you've done to come."
As she spoke, she looked intently at Mushkin, trying to find some explanation of his coming. Mushkin would perhaps have made some reply to her friendly words, but he was so dazzled and overwhelmed that he could not utter a word. Nastasia Philipovna noticed this with satisfaction. That evening she was in full dress, and her appearance was very striking. She took him by the hand and led him to the company. At the door of the drawing-room, Mushkin suddenly stopped, and with extraordinary emotion whispered hurriedly,
"Everything is perfection in you, even your being thin and pale. One would not like to imagine you different. I had such a longing to come to you. Forgive me." "Don't ask forgiveness," laughed Nastasia Philipovna. "That would destroy all the strangeness and originality. It's true what they say, that you are a strange man. So you look upon me as perfection, do you?" "Yes. Though you are first-rate at guessing, you are mistaken. I'll remind you of that today."
She introduced Mushkin to her guests, to more than half of whom he was already known. Totski at once said something cordial. The whole company seemed to revive. They all began talking and laughing. Nastasia Philipovna made Mushkin sit down beside her.
"But after all, what is there wonderful in the prince's having come?" Ferdyshenko cried louder than all of them. "It's a clear case. It speaks for itself."
"It's too clear and speaks too plainly for itself," put in Gania, who had been silent till then. "I've been observing the prince today almost continuously from the very instant when he saw Nastasia Philipovna's portrait for the first time this morning on Ivan Fyodorovitch's table. I remember distinctly that I thought of something even then, which I am quite convinced of now, and which the prince confessed himself, by the way." This whole speech Gania uttered quite seriously, without a hint of playfulness, in a gloomy tone which sounded strange.
"I've made you no confession," replied Mushkin, flushing. "I simply answered your question."
"Bravo! Bravo!" shouted Ferdyshenko. "That's sincere anyway. It's sly and sincere, too."
Everyone laughed aloud.
"Don't shout, Ferdyshenko,"
Titsin observed to him in an undertone with disgust.
"Well, I should not have expected such an enterprise of you, Prince," remarked Ivan Fyodorovitch. "One wouldn't have thought you were that sort of fellow. Why, I looked on you as a philosopher." "Ah!" the sly dog. To judge from the way the prince blushes at an innocent jest like an innocent young girl, I conclude that, like an honourable young man, he is cherishing the most laudable intentions in his heart.
The aged teacher, a toothless old man of 70, suddenly said, or rather mumbled, to the general surprise, for no one had expected him to open his lips that evening. Everyone laughed more than ever. The old man, probably imagining that they were laughing at his wit, laughed more and more heartily as he looked at them, till he ended by coughing violently. Nastasia Philipovna, who had an unaccountable affection for all such queer old men and women, and for crazy people even, began looking after him at once, kissed him, and ordered some more tea for him. She told the servant who came in to bring her a cloak, in which she wrapped herself, and then to put more wood on the fire. She asked what time it was, and the servant answered that it was 10:30.
"Friends, would you like some champagne?" Nastasia Philipovna suggested suddenly. "I've got some ready. Perhaps it will make you more cheerful. Please, don't stand on ceremony."
The offer of wine, especially in such a naive way, seemed very strange from Nastasia Philipovna. Everyone knew the rigid standard of decorum maintained at her previous parties. The company was becoming more lively, but not in the same way as usual. The wine was, however, accepted, first by General Epanchin himself, secondly by the sprightly lady, the old man, Ferdyshenko, and after them by the rest. Totski, too, took his glass, hoping to modify the novel tone of the company by giving it as far as possible the character of pleasant playfulness. Only Ganya drank nothing. Nastasia Philipovna had taken a glass of champagne and declared that she would drink three that evening. It was difficult to understand her strange and at times abrupt and sudden sallies, her hysterical and causeless laughter, alternating with silent and even morose depression. Some of her visitors suspected that she was feverish. They began to notice at last that she too seemed expecting something, frequently looked at her watch and was becoming impatient and preoccupied.
"You seem to be a little feverish,"
asked the sprightly lady.
"Not a little, but very much. That's why I wrap myself up in my cloak," replied Nastasia Philipovna,
who really was turning pale and seemed at times trying to suppress a violent shiver. They were all concerned and made a movement.
"Shouldn't we let our hostess rest?" said Totski, looking at Ivan Fyodorovitch.
"Certainly not. I beg you to stay. I need your presence, especially today," Nastasia Philipovna observed suddenly, with a significant emphasis.
And as almost all the guests knew that a very important decision was to be made that evening, her words seemed pregnant with meaning. General Epanchin and Totski exchanged glances once more. Ganya twitched convulsively.
"It would be a good thing to play some petit jeu," observed the sprightly lady.
"I know a new splendid petit jeu," put in Ferdyshenko, "though it was only played once, and even then it was not successful."
"What was it?"
asked the sprightly lady.
"A party of us were together one day. We'd been drinking, it's true, and suddenly someone made the suggestion that each one of us, without leaving the table, should tell something he had done, something that he himself honestly considered the worst of all the evil actions of his life. But it was to be done honestly. That was the point. That it was to be honest, no lying." "A strange idea," said the general. "Nothing could be stranger, Your Excellency, but that's the best of it." "Ridiculous idea," said Totski. "But I can understand it. It's just a form of bragging."
"Perhaps that was just what we wanted, Afanasy Ivanovich."
"But such a petit jeu would set us crying instead of laughing," observed the sprightly lady.
"It's quite impossible and absurd," Titsin chimed in.
"Was it successful?"
asked Nastasia Philipovna.
"Well, no, it was a failure. Everyone certainly did tell something. Many of them told the truth, and, would you believe it, some of them positively enjoyed telling it. But afterwards everyone was ashamed. They couldn't keep it up. On the whole, though, it was very amusing, in a way, of course."
"It really would be nice," observed Nastasia Philipovna, suddenly growing eager. "Let's try it, gentlemen. We really are not very lively. If each of us would consent to tell something of that sort, of course, voluntarily. No one is forced to do it, eh? Perhaps we could keep it up. It would be awfully original, anyway."
"It's a stroke of genius," said Ferdyshenko.
Ladies are excluded, however. Men must begin. We'll cast lots, as we did then. We must. We must. If anyone really doesn't want to, of course, he needn't. But that's being very disagreeable. Throw your lots into my hat here, gentlemen. The prince shall draw them. Nothing could be simpler. To describe the worst thing you've done in your life. That's awfully easy, gentlemen. You'll see. If anyone forgets, I'll undertake to remind him.
The idea seemed a very queer one, and almost everyone disliked it. Some frowned, some smiled slyly, some protested, but faintly. Ivan Fyodorovitch, for instance, who was loath to oppose Nastasia Philipovna, and noticed how attracted she was by this strange idea, perhaps simply because it was strange and almost impossible. Nastasia Philipovna was always self-willed and inconsiderate when once she had expressed a desire, even though it were the veriest caprice, of no benefit to her. And now she seemed hysterical, ran to and fro and laughed spasmodically and violently, especially at Totski's uneasy protests. Her dark eyes glittered. There was a hectic flush on her pale cheeks. The dejected and disgusted air of some of her visitors possibly increased her ironical desire to play the game. Perhaps the cynicism and the cruelty of the idea was just what attracted her. Some of the party were persuaded that she had a special object in it, yet they assented. It was curious, anyway, and to many people the prospect was alluring. Ferdyshenko was the most excited of all.
"What if it's something one can't tell?"
"Before ladies," observed the silent youth timidly.
"Why, don't tell it, then. There are plenty of wicked actions without that," answered Ferdyshenko. Oh, you young people."
"But I don't know which of my actions I consider the worst," put in the sprightly lady.
"Ladies are exempted from the obligation," repeated Ferdyshenko, "but only from the obligation. Anything of their own inspiration will be accepted with gratitude. Men are exempt as well if they object too much."
"But what proof is there that I shan't tell lies?" inquired Ganya. "And if I do, the whole point of the game is lost. And who wouldn't tell lies? Everyone is sure to."
"Why, that's one thing that's fascinating, to see what sort of lies a man will tell. There's no particular danger of your telling lies, Ganya, for we all know your worst action as it is. But fancy, gentlemen," Ferdyshenko cried with sudden inspiration, "only think with what eyes we shall look at one another tomorrow, for instance, after we've told our tales."
"But is this possible? Are you really in earnest, Nastasia Philipovna?" Totski asked with dignity.
"If you are afraid of wolves, you mustn't go into the forest," observed Nastasia Philipovna sneeringly.
"But let me ask you, Mr. Ferdyshenko, what sort of petit jeu can one make out of this?"
Totski went on, more and more uneasy.
"I assure you that such things are never successful. You say yourself that it has been unsuccessful once already."
"Unsuccessful? Why, last time I told the story of how I stole 3 rubles. I simply told it straight off."
"I dare say. But I suppose there was no possibility of your telling it so that it seemed like the truth, and that you were believed. Gavril Ardalionovitch has observed very justly that with the slightest hint of falsehood, the whole point of the game is lost. Telling the truth is only possible by accident, through a special sort of boastfulness in the worst possible taste, inconceivable and utterly unsuitable here."
"But what a subtle person you are, Afanasy Ivanovitch," cried Ferdyshenko. "You positively surprise me. Only fancy, gentlemen, by observing that I couldn't tell the story of my thieving so as to make it like the truth, Afanasy Ivanovitch hints in the subtlest way that I couldn't really have stolen. For it would have been bad form to have said so aloud. Though perhaps he is privately convinced that Ferdyshenko may very well have been a thief. But to business, gentlemen, to business. The lots are collected, and you've put in yours too, Afanasy Ivanovitch. So no one has refused. Prince, draw."
Without a word, Mushkin put his hand into the hat, and the first lot he drew was Ferdyshenko's, the second, Titsin's, the third, General Apanchin's, the fourth, Totsky's, the fifth, his own, the sixth, Ganya's, and so on. The ladies had not put in lots.
"Good heavens, what a misfortune!"
cried Ferdoshenko. "I thought that the first would be the prince, and then the general. But thank God Ivan Petrovich comes after me, and I shall be rewarded. Well, gentlemen, I am bound, of course, to set a good example, but what I regret most of all at this moment is that I am a person of no consequence, and not distinguished in any way, not even of decent rank. Of what interest is it to anyone that Ferdoshenko should have done something horrid? And what is my worst action? There's an embarras de richesse. Shall I tell of the same theft again, to convince Afanasy Ivanovitch that one may steal without being a thief? You are also convincing me, Mr. Ferdoshenko, that it's possible to enjoy, even to revel in describing one's nasty actions, even though one is not asked about them. But excuse me, Mr. Ferdoshenko.
Begin, Ferdoshenko. You are chattering too much and will never finish,
Nastasya Philipovna insisted with irritable impatience. Everyone noticed that after her hysterical laughter, she had suddenly become actually ill-humoured, peevish and irritable. Yet she persisted obstinately and imperiously in her wild caprice. Afanasy Ivanovitch was horribly uncomfortable. He was furious, too, at Ivan Fyodorovitch, who sat sipping champagne as though there were nothing the matter, perhaps reckoning on telling something when his turn came.